Next case on the court's calendar this morning is Rathbun versus Fillmore County. We're ready for argument. The attorneys should state their name for the record before each leg of their argument. So we have you identified for the oral recording that's created for the public. You may proceed.
May it please the court, my name is Ken Bayless, and I represent appellant Fillmore County. The decision of the trial court should be reversed because it was based on an erroneous interpretation of the law. In our brief, we argued both discretionary immunity and official immunity. I will start with a discussion of official immunity because it is the stronger argument. The trial court erred in its analysis of official immunity.
Can you just start by telling us what the policies are? It's just not clear to me what are the policies?
Sure. When you think of a pothole, you have to think of a number of different things that come into play. So first of all, there's the question of, well, how did it get there? And is there any negligence attributable to how it got there? So the first policies relate to the lifetime of the road and the fact that the roads aren't replaced frequently enough, and that gives rise to potholes forming. So we address that in the affidavit. And then, in addition, you have policies related.
Yeah, you address what is the policy, though, with potholes?
The policy is that pothole defects, are repaired at the time of the road reconstruction. It's a general matter.
So I appreciate that, but Mr. Gregg says that it's not a pothole, and it isn't something that would be fixed.
He says it's a pavement defect that would not require any kind of repair. And he's the only one that is qualified to talk about it. He's the only one who says anything on that. Plaintiff didn't call an expert witness who said, no, indeed, this is the type of road defect that would require some type of repair. He inspected it and determined that even under the policies, it wouldn't require any kind of repair. But your first question about what other policies come into play is the signing policies. So you have a question of, okay, so you've got potholes. Do you put up signs? And he addresses that. There's another question, okay, well, how about putting up barricades? So he addresses that. How about filling it with bituminous during when people call in and have complaints? So all those issues, different types of policies are addressed in his declaration.
So he talks about, I agree with you, that he does talk about what do we generally do with potholes, what do we generally do with barricades, how do we, when do we warn, when do we, fix defects in the road or the roadway. But then he also says, I eyeballed this. This is not something that we would fix. This is not something that we would warn about. This is not something that we would essentially do anything about, which seems to me there's no exercise of discretion that's necessary because this isn't anything that anybody would do anything about. It's a fixed something.
Well, there is under both the two discretionary tests, one the discretionary immunity test and the official immunity test, because the plaintiffs contend in their complaint that we should have put a forest of warning signs up across the county. Now,
to warn of these types of defects. I know what they say you should have done.
Right.
But your person, Mr. or Gregg, says we would never do that.
Well,
we would never do that.
Well, so the fact that we wouldn't do it for an actual pothole that everybody agrees is a pothole of whatever nature, and this particular type of defect doesn't come into play. He's saying if it's the larger pothole instead of just a pavement defect, let's say, he's not putting up signs. So
no,
that.
But he looked at this thing.
Yes.
And he said we would not do anything, which means there's no exercise of discretion. This is not something that we would act on ever.
It's our obligation to address the claims that are made in the complaint. And if you look at the complaint, the specific claims that are made by the plaintiffs are, you should have put up signs to warn of this. And he says there are two different reasons that that's not true. One, we don't have to put it up because this particular type of defect wouldn't require it. Two, even when we're talking about potholes generally of a system-wide nature, we don't put up signs for those. And he provides the reasons that those particular signs are not erected. And this is not...
What is the actual exercise of discretion with respect to this thing?
Well, the decision not to put up signs that would warn of the hazard. They're saying in the complaint that you need a warn of the warn of the hazard. We don't warn of the hazard. He spells that out for pavement defects. And he's made that determination, and it's been applied system-wide.
I think we're having a little bit of a disconnect. The fact that a decision is made doesn't necessarily mean that that decision involved the exercise of some professional judgment.
True.
So... And he says that these are not things that we would ever warn about or fix.
So this particular line of argument, I'm sorry to interrupt.
Counsel, please don't interrupt.
I'm sorry.
I mean, he says that there's no discretion that, I mean, the way I'm reading what his testimony is and what his affidavit is he's not exercising any discretion. This is a fixed thing. We would not do anything about this.
This is the precise argument that was rejected in the Minder case. The same argument was made. Well, because there was nobody that went out and looked at it, there's no discretion that's being exercised. And Minder said, no, if you have a system-wide pothole policy, as we do here, that's good enough, and it confers the discretion because you've made a decision system-wide not to apply those particular types of warning devices or barricades.
I mean, Minder had, like, a very detailed policy with, like, grading of potholes. I mean, we don't have that here.
That's true. We don't have the exact same policy that we have in Minder, but Minder does state that the fact that that people don't go out and look at particular potholes after accidents have happened and make determinations about them doesn't mean that the decision not to put up the signs isn't protected by the discretion that's inherent in official immunity.
What is the county's pothole policy?
Well, so as you can imagine, driving surfaces are job one for the highway department in Fillmore County. So the pothole policies are a number of different policies. The first one relates to what do we do if we have somebody call in a complaint, and that was addressed in the declaration. So if somebody calls in a complaint, we respond to that. In this case, there was no complaint, so there was no response. The second question.
How was that policy developed?
It was developed as a practice of the Fillmore County Highway Department.
Where's that in the record?
It's in the declaration. So we're relying on the declaration for that point. Now, I want to direct the court to the important difference here between the discretionary immunity and official immunity. If you look at the argument the court made along the lines of, well, there's not enough there to establish that there's a policy decision has actually been made, which is what the trial court determined when it applied Conlin, that analysis doesn't apply to the question of official immunity. Official immunity standard is different from discretionary immunity. Those are two different standards. And the case law makes it very clear that the discretion is different. The discretionary immunity test is just, is it planning or is it operational? And it's clear from the case law that operational decisions can still be protected under official immunity. And that's what we're arguing here, because the official immunity test is much, much broader than the discretionary immunity test that was discussed in the Conlin case that went through this analysis of how detailed, what are the balancing public factors. We think we did that here. But beyond that, what the official immunity test requires is just that there be some kind of discretion that's being, professional discretion that's being exercised. And the declaration of Greg is certainly sufficient to meet that standard. It's a low standard.
Do you see operational discretionary decision-making in the policy you've already mentioned, the pothole policy about when a complaint is made, the county will respond?
Yes.
Okay, so where does the discretion enter? It seems to me, but I'm just saying this so you can help me out. It seems to me the discretion would be in the response, not in whether to respond, because the county's policy is we will respond if there's a complaint.
I think it's really important the court look to the Schroeder case on this point and also look to the Anderson v. Anoka-Hennepin case. And what it says is you have the individual acting on the street level, let's say in this case, actually doing the repairs. And then you have a decision made back at the office. And what Anderson and Schroeder stand for are those decisions made back in the office are still protected even if the employee who responds.
Those are those are official immunity?
Those are. Decisions? Those are two official immunity cases from the Minnesota Supreme Court, and it's my central argument here. And the key language in Schroeder that I want to point the court to is found on page 506. And this is the gist of the official immunity argument, I think. It quotes, where it's talking about what it said in Anderson. We held that official immunity is not forfeited because conduct is ministerial. So it's not forfeited.
But then on page 507, the court says we focus our inquiry on the nature of the act itself.
That's true.
Which goes to Judge Bradfield's question. It's not what happens in the office necessarily. It happens when you're acting on whatever the complaint is, right?
Right. But the Schroeder court goes on and says, if that ministerial conduct was required by a protocol established through the exercise of discretionary judgment, that would itself be protected by official immunity. It's protected. That's it again at 506. So what it's saying is you don't have to meet the discretionary immunity standard back at the office. Back at the office, what you have to meet is the official immunity standard. And I know this is a little confusing because, unfortunately, the name of one test is the test in the other. So we have discretionary immunity, which has planning and operational. Then we have official immunity, which has the word discretion in it, which is the name of the other immunity.
When was the decision? It sounds like the policy is unless somebody brings a pothole to our attention, we don't do anything. And if somebody brings a pothole to our attention, we go out and look at it and do something.
That's true.
How and when was that policy developed? Who came up with that policy?
The traffic engineer, the traffic engineer, and the county came up with that policy. That's the policy they arrived at.
Was there a meeting? Was there a public hearing? I mean, did Greg just decide this is how I'm going to operate?
Well, he says, what we know from his declaration is he says that is the policy. Now, the issues you're raising go to the Conlon question of, okay, well, what factors were weighed in arriving at such a policy?
Well, I think my question is, were any factors weighed in arriving at that policy, and can something be a policy if somebody just arbitrarily says, we're not going to do anything unless someone brings it to our attention?
Well, he explains how they arrive at that. He talks about, first of all, how it is that they need to have a policy, mm-hmm. because when you don't fund your roads properly, they deteriorate. Then he talks about the different aspects of how they deal with potholes, and he does that in several different areas in his declaration. We think that he's stating that it's a professional judgment because he's talking about issues like not losing resources that can be used for other aspects of his highway department. He can, if you put a forest of signs across the county saying there's a pothole, or you put up barricades, then you have to go out and actually maintain the barricades, and you have to maintain the signs in addition to erecting them. So now you've got another problem on your hands. And you'll notice as you travel the state of Minnesota and the streets of St. Paul, for sure, that you don't see signs saying, oh, there's a pothole here along the side of the road. And the reason you don't have it is for just this reason, because if you take money away from that, then you don't have money to rebuild the roads, which is the real problem that we have here.
I appreciate all of that, but I don't see any of that in his declaration or in his deposition testimony.
He explained it, I think, at great length in his declaration about the need. He talked about we have 24, I think he said it was something like 28 miles of county state aid highways, and we only have enough to reconstruct 0.3. So every year in their budget, he spells this out, and that's different from Conlon. In Conlon, we have a single project in the city of St. Paul where the city never explained why it was that this is somehow an economic problem. It's a single project. What Greg is talking about is there are thousands of defects like this across the county, and that means you're going to have thousands of different signs to maintain and all that, and he spells that out in his affidavit, and that's totally different from Conlon, where it wasn't, they never talked about how many similar projects they had in Conlon. But I do want to point to the trial court's analysis. I think it's important to look to the trial court's decision. It's two paragraphs long on official immunity, and it's erroneous because it fails to recognize this point that I just made about Schroeder, where if you can show that the initial policy was made back at the office, and that was based on professional judgment. And the judge accepts that. He says he accepts that. And then he goes on to say, well, I'm not going to apply it here because the people in the field didn't have any discretion. Well, Schroeder, in the passage I cited, Anderson, in the passage that Schroeder refers to, and Minder, also in the part where it talks about the nature of the discretion, all reject that contention. The only other...
Your argument seems to me, it sounds like an argument for sovereign immunity, that if the government comes up with a policy, that's it, you get immunity. The way that I understand official immunity to work is that the policy has to be adopted and then it's in the implementation of the policy through the use of discretion by government officials so that they aren't afraid of exercising their judgment without fear of being sued.
I see my time has expired. May I respond?
Of course.
Well, sovereign immunity doesn't apply here. We agree with that. This is a specific series of policies that relate to potholes and how counties and governmental entities deal with the real problem they have of underfunding and what they do in response to potholes system-wide. And we think that Fillmore County has established that even if it doesn't meet the discretionary immunity standard, it meets the official immunity standard, and it's very low bar for discretionary immunity. For discretion. Thank you.
Thank you.
All right, good morning, Your Honors, opposing counsel. I want to start with that last point that we were talking about, fear of prosecution of the
Derek Stewart
on behalf of Respondent Christine Rathman. My apologies, Your Honor.
Of course.
I want to start with that last point regarding official immunity and that the public official would fear prosecution or fear liability if they were exercising their duty, and that the goal of official immunity is to determine or is to protect that individual in the exercise of their discretion in carrying out their job duties. Well, in this case, that question can be answered that Greg would not fear any liability for the exercise of his job duties in repairing this pothole because he didn't exercise any discretion with respect to this pothole, with respect to this hazard, and he didn't exercise any discretion with respect to anything in the field because he doesn't inspect potholes or repair potholes. And I think that's very clear, both in argument and also in his declaration. Now, addressing the...
Isn't the discretionary element of the repair, the ultimate repair, baked into the policy that's been adopted by the county? We look at these things, we make a determination whether it's something that is immediate, posing an immediate hazard to drivers. If it is not, then we're going to repair it in the normal course of road construction. And that is the decision that sort of, that's the thread that carries all the way through to the conclusion. I mean, isn't that the discretion that's baked into that policy?
Well, I would distinguish it and say there's discretion within the policy, loosely accepting that there is a policy. There seemed to be some question of that on
assuming
argument.
Assuming there's a policy.
There is some discretion baked into it, but what's important for the official immunity analysis is the exercise of the discretion at the operational level, the day-to-day level. What was the individual doing in that moment? The case law is replete with examples of individuals that face incomplete information. The nature and complexity of their decision making is key to the court's analysis and why they are protected in that moment. And so in this case, the individuals that actually would have been analyzing the pothole, seeing if the pothole would have been repaired, seeing if it was something that they could put a cold patch on or warn about, those are 18 individuals that work below Greg and Brett Cohn. And we don't know anything about their discretion. We don't have any information about their decision-making. We don't know the nature and extent and complexity of their decision-making in this case.
So
there's no evidence before.
So say we agree with you and you get a remand for trial, and then the county puts on all 18 of these people at trial to say, this is how I exercise my discretion. And then they move for judgment as a matter of law on immunity grounds at trial. I mean, is there a problem there?
Respectfully, Your Honor, we're asking for an affirmance. And if we went to trial and they paraded 18 individuals up there that offered that testimony, then we could cross that bridge when we get to it. The record and the evidence before the court today is not that evidence. What we have is a deposition testimony from Greg, and we have a declaration from Greg, and we have the county determining at their motion for summary judgment that Greg was the individual they wanted to apply official immunity to. And for the first time, that's when they brought that up. The reason, and I want to talk a little bit about the district court's decision in this matter with respect to official immunity, was about two paragraphs. That's correct, but the argument was about three pages at the end of a summary judgment hearing where they didn't mention the official that they wanted official immunity to apply to. And so, you know, having a little bit of, well, feeling for the district court here, they had limited facts, and the argument was, well, what's the policy? What was the individual discretion? What was the individual doing? All the questions you might expect for official immunity were left largely in the wind, which gets to another point that I want to talk about, is that immunity is the exception. Governmental liability is the rule. And so if official immunity or discretionary immunity doesn't apply, or it doesn't narrowly apply in the circumstance, the court doesn't need to imagine circumstances in which it would apply or similar situations in which it would apply. If the evidence in this case doesn't demonstrate that immunity does apply, it should not apply because the rule is governmental liability. I want to talk a little bit about statutory immunity, and so switching gears here. And I think Judge Kleinfelter was absolutely right with respect to Greg's declaration. It's reciting that the county doesn't have sufficient resources to repair all the roads that they have for a given season, and that's effectively all it does. There's no balancing of policy objectives. There's no safety considerations outside of listing that there's insufficient funds. There's no economic considerations. There's no mention of alternatives. There's no notation of any.
How much more specific does the county have to get, though? I mean, it is evident that governments have limited funds. They have limited resources to handle a lot of things that they can't handle, and they have to make choices, and that's the essence of Mr. Gregg's affidavit. So what else is missing there that the county would need in order to satisfy its burden, in your view?
Yes, Your Honor, and I think this was mentioned on argument for the appellant, too. There's no weighing of factors, and I think that's really key in the declaration. There's a mention of economic factors, right? There's not sufficient resources. There's also a problem. The roads are degrading over time, and they're aware of that. And there's no connection of those, that because there are insufficient resources, we cannot address all of the roads, and therefore we have adopted this policy. The level of analysis, the weighing of factors, and anything outside of economic consideration, the record is just completely bereft of any of that.
Why is paragraph 10 enough, where he says that budgetary constraints have compelled me to make difficult decisions about the allocation of resources between competing interests, namely between reconstruction and maintenance among competing safety concerns? What's wrong with that?
For a couple of reasons. One, it appears that if you look at the deposition testimony of Brent Cohn, the repair that we're talking about with respect to cold patches and warnings and things like that appears to be completely separate from the reconstruction schedule. These materials are on hand, and the county can get them freely. There's three different plants in the area that Brent Cohn talks about. So any real mention of this reconstruction project, well, aspirational, is occurring over time, and it got kicked out 10 years, and there are arguments why reconstruction is better than repair, but they appear to be on separate tracks. And so the hazard that we're talking about in this case could have been addressed either by warning or repair, both of which are well supported in the testimony, and neither of which are addressed by Ronald Gregg. And so that would be my response to that. And the other is, again, paragraph 10 is little more than, again, this economic factor, this economic consideration. There's nothing there with respect to policy considerations, alternatives, as well as safety considerations with respect to Greg's declaration. And so with respect to that, I think it's I think it's key, and we cited this in our case with respect to Grimm v. Zumbro Falls, an unpublished decision that was contained within the materials. It's important to not just rubber stamp these declarations and apply statutory immunity. There needs to be more. There needs to be an analysis, and it needs to be narrowly applied. And we address that in our materials as well. With respect to the Minder case that we were talking about a moment ago, because discretionary immunity is an exception to the general rule of governmental liability, courts must narrowly construe it. And so I believe it's important to bear that in mind when considering whether statutory immunity applies in this circumstance, and we believe that Judge Kleinfelter got it absolutely right that this declaration was woefully insufficient.
I asked you a question about a remand. I'm wondering whether the county should be foreclosed from asserting immunity at all at future stages of the proceedings, given the undisputed testimony that this is not something that would be repaired, just eyeballing it, that there would be no exercise of discretion. In other words, this is a ministerial determination, not a discretionary one. Do you want to comment on that?
You never know how the testimony is going to come out at trial. You never know how the evidence is going to be portrayed. But the evidence as we have before it, before ourselves right now, before the court, there's no, I would agree, there's no exercise of discretion. There's outside of Greg, and Greg's declaration is lacking with respect to that. His deposition testimony didn't relay any of that. Neither did Cohn's. There is no exercise of discretion. And so with respect to official immunity, I would argue that absolutely it should be foreclosed. I want to touch a little bit on the cases that were mentioned with respect to Anderson and Schroeder. We talked about these at great length in our briefing, and so I'll try not to belabor the point. But when considering those cases, I think it's important to look at the individual exercising discretion, and this is more of an official immunity argument. Kind of pivoting back to that discussion. In Schroeder, there was a grader that was driving a grader down the wrong way of the road. He had been told that he could do that, but he still needed to exercise his discretion in determining that it was safe to do it at that point and that it made sense in the moment because he wanted to finish grading the road by the end of the day. There would have been a time consideration if he would have had to go all the way to the other side of the road and drive back down with the same way as traffic. As the result of him exercising his discretion, he ultimately caused a car crash occurred, and that was kind of the seminal issue in the case. Those facts are distinct from the facts that are before you today. In this case, we have Greg's declaration, Greg's deposition, and Cohn's deposition, and that's it. We don't know anything about the individuals that may have exercised discretion or could have exercised discretion with respect to this pothole. And so the idea that in Schroeder, the individual was given the opportunity to drive the wrong way down the road and he was afforded that by the county is very different from the facts in this case. And with respect to Anderson, and we addressed this at great length as well, Anderson involved an IT department. A student was cutting a piece of wood on a rip saw or performing a rip cut. You can tell I'm a blue-collar guy, and I know what I'm talking about here. But he was using a piece of wood to push it through without the guard on. And the teacher in that individual class was supervising the rip cut being performed. At the same time, that teacher had been part of a decision-making body for the whole district that determined this was the safest course of action. And in determining that policy, that the guard would be lifted, they exercised their scientific and professional discretion in determining that policy. And therefore, the official immunity flowed downwards because the individual was acting in compliance with the policy that had been determined. That evidence is not before us. We don't know anything about the individuals, the boots on the ground, the actual workers, the people that did the day-to-day. And that, I think, ultimately is why official immunity does not apply in this circumstance. I think I'll pivot a little bit and just remind the court again that that immunity is the exception. Governmental liability is the rule, and I can't stress enough that because the facts of this case don't fit official immunity and don't fit statutory immunity, the court doesn't need to bend over backwards to try to force the issue and make sure that it applies in this circumstance. The applicable rule is governmental liability, and governmental liability applies because official immunity and statutory immunity do not apply in this circumstance. With that, if there are no questions, I'll waive my remaining time.
No.
Thank you, Your Honor.
I'd first like to address Judge Frisch's comment about remand, and there would be no basis for precluding the county from addressing these issues at the trial court. Parties are allowed to argue theories in the alternative, and it can't be the case that just because they say we wouldn't do it, that when they say we should have put up signs, that we can't respond to that by saying the law is that we don't have to put up signs. We think that would be inconsistent with the basic principle that parties can be allowed to argue in the alternative. Counsel is suggesting that this court should contravene the decision of the Minnesota Supreme Court in Schroeder and in Anderson, because those were both cases where there was a ministerial action taken by somebody who wasn't exercising any discretion, but a higher authority had made a policy-based decision. Here, the trial court, in its very short half a page order on official immunity, accepts that there was that policy, but then says that because there was a policy, that meant the people down below weren't exercising any discretion. This was expressly rejected in the passage I earlier cited in the Schroeder case as it talked about the Anoka-Hennepin case. In Anoka-Hennepin, you did have this shop accident where somebody cut his hand, and what the court said was, even though the person in the shop class was exercising no discretion, because a decision up here had been made, it's protected. And the same thing happened in Schroeder. Even though the operator in the field who was driving the road grader in a way that created a windrow in the middle of the road was doing and was going against traffic, even though he was doing that, and even though he didn't exercise any discretion because he was just following the policy, the court said, no, that's wrong. Official immunity applies because the policy that they were talking about did involve some professional judgment. And if nothing else, that the declaration of Greg shows that we're using professional judgment to make these determinations about how it is that we repair and patch our roads.
Your esteemed colleague, his argument is that in those cases, there was evidence that was presented on the actual discharge of the function pursuant to the policy. And we don't have that here. We don't have any evidence in this record where the person who was actually received the complaint didn't receive the complaint, but that there was no exercise of discretion and by someone with boots on the ground. Do you want to address that?
Yes. Remember, this is a summary judgment motion. So we presented our position, and then it was incumbent upon the plaintiff to come forward with the evidence they had to contravene that. And they had the opportunity to take depositions, to conduct discovery.
I mean, it's a little bit different because the burden of establishing immunity is on you.
True,
Which is a little different.
But we conduct discovery all the time on issues that we may not have the burden of proof on. Just because you have the burden of proof on something or don't have the burden of proof doesn't mean that you don't conduct discovery. In fact, you pay attention to the defenses that are asserted in the answer, and we asserted official immunity in our answer. You pay attention to the discovery that goes by and says this is something we're going to assert, and then you take the necessary depositions.
Can we just get back to the question that I originally asked, and that is why isn't the absence of the boots on the ground testimony in this case a salient distinction from Schroeder and Anderson?
Well, because they don't even have if they don't have any discretion, why does it matter? I mean, what Anderson and Schroeder say is you look to the supervening policy to determine whether that is something that's protected by discretionary immunity. And if it is, I mean, what the court said in those cases was the testimony of the person in the shop amounted to a zero, amounted to nothing, because it was just ministerial. But what counts was what the policy in the office was. And if you apply that principle here, we have the policy in the office, and it's not going to matter what those people in the say. The people in the field say they followed the policy. Okay, fine. How is that going to affect the entitlement to official immunity under the applicable official immunity test that says issues about professional judgment are protected by discretionary or official immunity? Excuse me. So there seems to be an argument here that was just, you know, we could have solved this whole problem just with like a shovel full of a fill or something. It's a simple problem. It's an easy thing to fix. But the reality is that these are system-wide problems that they have to face. It's not just one pothole, because we don't know where people are going to fall down. So on a system that has thousands of these types of defects, when you're talking about the burden the county faces economically, we've spelled it out, and we think that entitles us to official immunity. We'd ask the court to reverse the decision below and enter judgment for Fillmore County. Thank you.
For your arguments and briefing, the matter is submitted. You'll have that concludes the court's oral arguments. We will now head to our non-oral candidate.
Thank you.